In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears, real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
You're tuned in to the Gangster Chronicles with James McDonald, Reggie Wright Jr., and Alex Alonzo on the Digital Soapbox Network.
I have a material witness on an aggravated battery with a handgun, and they believe this might be in retaliation to her testimony.
Welcome to another episode of Gangster Chronicles. This is Alex Alonso, and I'm sitting here with two brothers who are the co-hosts of the show.
Reggie Wright.
And Big James.
And thanks for being here, fellas. We're going to have this show actually is going to be completely inspired by people on social media that put in their questions. They've been listening to the show every week. They've been downloading it. So today is all about the viewers, well, not the viewers, the listeners.
The listeners
that have been listening to the show. And
and you can do that on Instagram.
Yes, let's make sure you go to the Instagram account, Gangster Chronicles. No the, it's just Gangster Chronicles. Make sure you follow. And anytime you want to post a question, we're going to check it out. We're going to read all the comments and questions on there. And we're going to start off with our first question of the day. And the first one is, how did the Blood versus Crip beef begin? What sets and what issues started the beef? Now, this is something that I actually wrote about in my master's thesis when I was going to USC. I kind of tried to uncover the history of how this all started and what got it going and what years it got going and what neighborhoods were setting it off. And I found out that 1969 was the year that Raymond Washington and about maybe 10, 11, 12 other dudes on the east side got that whole Crip thing going. But at the time, there were other neighborhoods that existed that weren't Crip or Blood. Like, for example, the Pyrus. Yeah. The West Side, well, they call the West Side Pyrus now, but the Pyrus were on Pyru Street in 1969 doing their thing on the West Side.
The East Side and the West Side.
Yeah, and then the East Side came out shortly after the West Side came out. This is around 69, 1970. Athens Park Boys existed around the same time. Your boy, the Miles, they started... The Figueroa Boys. They started the Figueroa Boys. Yeah. They were out around 1969, 70. The Shaq Boys was out around this time. All these neighborhoods, they weren't Crip or Blood. They was just all these different neighborhoods scattered throughout Los Angeles. Raymond starts his thing, and the first thing he starts to do is say, I want to start converting some of these neighborhoods into Crips. And some neighborhoods turn to Crips, and some don't. He went to Athens. They said, we good. They went to the Brims. They said, we good. In fact, the Crips were hanging out on Piru Street in 1970.
Back in the day.
Back in the day. The Crips and the Pirus were kind of functioning together, but then there was a little riff, and eventually that conflict started. Now, the conflict really comes in 1972. I tracked the first homicide, a L.A. Brim dude named Country, Lil Country, named Fred Garrett, was shot and killed in December of 72, and that's when everything goes haywire. That's when all these non-Crip sets start to say, damn, these Crips is really pressing the line. Did you want to say something?
No, I was just thinking, was that the time when Raymond Washington was shot behind that?
Raymond Washington was actually shot before 72. He was shot when it was pre-Crip. He hadn't even created the Crips yet because he was hanging out with the Avenues. Now, Raymond Washington looked up to Craig Munson. And this was 67, 66, 67, 68. Craig Munson had the Avenues.
Yeah.
With his brothers and a whole bunch of other dudes, Victor Adams, Donnie Boy, Teddy Bear. They were the Avenues. And then Raymond was like a youngster hanging out with the Avenues, and he had got shot around that time. So that shooting of Raymond Washington happened prior to him creating the Crips. In fact, him hanging out with Craig Munson is the reason why he started the Crips.
Yeah, that's one of the stories I get from my uncle. Because he used to be, my oldest uncle was a Slauson boy, when they was just saying Slauson.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a demon. My Uncle T was hanging with the Avenues. My Uncle Rab, and then I think my Uncle Chris, they were Shaq boys. And a lot of the Shaq boys, when the gangbanging started over there, like the Kitchen Crips and all of that, some of the guys went to Swans, the Shaq boys. They converted back across Central, and they were Swans, and my uncle and them was still Crips. And they were, like, with the Kitchens. And the reason why I know that is because my family been living on 81st and Hooper since 1963. And they still there right now in the day. And my Uncle T was one of these guys that was hanging with Raymond Washington, Big Teddy. I know all of these guys from them coming to my grandfather's house. We was little kids. I remember all of these guys coming through there. And I remember Teddy because Teddy was a big old fat dude, but he was solid.
Yeah.
And then the Munsons were around the corner. Teddy, Craig, Robert.
They were on 83rd and Hooper.
Yeah, they was around the corner.
Yep.
You walk straight up through the alley. Actually, they baby brother, Runt, was my best friend. And he was the smallest out of all of them, but he was a big, swole little youngster coming up too. But he was from Kitchen Crip. And me and him were from different size, but I got a lot of stories listening to them. The oldest brother that was doing life in the penitentiary. From Teddy. Teddy was pimping. They were more into themselves than really on the gangbanging tip.
Is this before you became a Mob Piru?
No, I was a little blood. I was a little bitty cat.
Okay.
When me and Runt started hanging together, and I was from the Mob, Runt was from Kitchen. I used to get my homeboys from the hood to come all the way. We rode our bikes to 81st and Hooper fighting against the 8-9s with Runt because his homies were scared of him.
The 8-9 East Coast Crips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we would go to Drew and fight the Crips with Runt.
So you was fighting, you a Piru, and fighting with the Kitchens against the 8-9 East Coast.
He was my like blood.
Did you ever feel like maybe I should be from where Runt is from?
No, because the homeboys rode with me. We got on our bikes and rode to L.A. to fight with Runt.
What years was this going on?
This was 70, 77.
Damn, James got some history right here.
Yeah, we was going to school with him.
Yeah.
And so by us going to school with Runt, I went to Drew, and Runt was one of my friends that kept cats away from me when I had went to Drew Junior High.
Why was you going all the way to Drew when you was living in Compton?
Because I was kicked out of Compton Unified.
Okay.
So my grandfather and them lived over there, so I went to Parmalee and I went to Drew. I went to I went to damn near every high school, Lock High. I went to Fremont, and I just didn't last long. So, but he was my friend all the way up until he got killed.
Now, before we move on to the next topic, I just want to know a little bit more about Runt, you know, what type of guy he was, because eventually he grew up to be kind of big.
He was a very big dude. If you ever seen anybody chiseled, you wouldn't even think he was built like
that. Now, you know who trained him, though, right?
No.
His big brother.
Yeah, well, they had so many weights in their yard.
Yeah.
And by him, he was stronger than his brother. He was stronger than Teddy.
And, well, I'm talking about Craig. Craig was solid. Yeah.
And then the only one that never lived weight is the other brother, Carlton, the light-skinned one.
Well, they had another brother named Salam. He lifted. And then the oldest brother was Joe.
Yeah.
Tall. He real tall also. Yep. I don't know. I don't think Joe lifted. Salam lifted.
No, Joe was well-built. He wasn't no skinny cat. None of them was really skinny, but Carlton.
Can you believe seven brothers, though, and it's one family?
Yeah. and their mama was with the business.
Yeah.
Their mama was a solid woman, and she dealt with them. I just seen Teddy not too long ago over there. You know, Teddy into the lowriders and jewelry. When you see Teddy, you think this cat just weighed down with gold. And they always been real cool. We was little cats, and they looked out for us. And my uncles, Bubba and all of those guys, Bubba doing life in the penitentiary right now from over there. It was so many of those guys that we talk about right now. I know of all of them.
Now, the second part of this question is what sets and what issue started the beef. Back in 70, 71, it was just West Side Crip, East Side Crip, Compton Crip.
Yeah.
That was it. But then they were starting to splinter off sets. The Fautre Gangsters, they must have came out in like 71, 72. The 88 Avalons came out. And those would be some of the oldest sets. Kitchen Crip is real old. They go back to probably 71, 72. Yeah. And then in terms of the sets that eventually became Bloods, you had the L.A. Brims. They became Bloods. The Pyrus became Bloods. The Denver Lanes became Bloods.
Well, the Bloods pretty much, I think, to my knowledge, the Bottoms, the 20s and all of that, they started first. They was Bloods.
Yeah.
And then it trickled coming up toward us.
The Outlaws,
yeah.
The Villains, the Peblos, and they actually had 40 Pyru, then 30 Pyru. Those all became Blood sets. So to answer that guy's question, those are the main sets that was active in the early 70s when the Blood Crip beef just started jumping off. So this kind of goes right into our next topic.
Why y'all left out the Watts sets?
The Watts sets? Well, you know, the Watts came a little later.
A little later?
Yeah, because they went to Compton first.
Mm-hmm.
And even though there was a lot of dudes that grew up in Compton, the guys that started Compton Crip were from Watts. They moved from Watts to Compton. Head Honcho. Head Honcho started the Compton Crips along with another one of Raymond's dudes. But they were from Watts, but they moved to Compton.
Mm-hmm.
Then after they got the Compton Crips going, they came back to Watts. And Hickory Street Watts is the first Crip set in Watts.
Yep.
That came out about 73, maybe.
Which is over in Grape Street now. Hickory.
Well, yeah, it's right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, of course, Grape came out from Head Honcho's little brother, Wayne Day, changed the name. It started off as Jordan Downs Crip. That's what it was originally.
Yeah,
then around 74, 75.
Because that was the Projects.
Yeah, it was the Projects there. Then they changed the name to Grape Street Crip.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it's some interesting history, Los Angeles history. And I feel like this history is just as important as any other history.
Well,
you know, I think there should be history books on Black L.A., street culture.
And it's a lot about it that you want to know because, man, I mean, even though you got a lot of killing and all of this other shit going on.
Hey, the Mafia got a lot of killing and they're making movies, they're making books.
Exactly.
It's celebrated.
But we're not doing that.
But when we talk about Black history when it's related to violence, it's like we're glorifying it.
Exactly.
Why can't Blacks tell their stories as it relates to urban street culture in the same way it gets romanticized and celebrated when Italians or Irish or the Jews are telling their street histories?
Yeah. And it's way different now.
So I guess y'all didn't like colors, huh?
No. I mean, way back in the days, man, right. They when Raymond Washington was doing this, they was taking leather jackets, they was carrying switchblades, yeah, and little bitty 38s and 22s.
Yeah.
Today, we're using AK-47s and 9mm. So they done stepped the game up on what gangbanging is today. It's totally different from then. Back then, they fought. They fought.
Less now, fighting today.
Exactly. Yeah. So you had to prove yourself back then as well as being a man with your hands, opposed to now. I ain't got to say nothing to you. I just shoot you.
The only time you're fighting is when you're fighting your own homies. You exactly. ain't fighting the rivals no more.
Exactly. And I think y'all need to touch on the pretty much where the Pyrus and the Crips and all the, pretty much came from the school colors as well.
That's interesting because I always thought it was a coincidence.
No.
Like Centennial High is red.
And Bunny Hunters, and they were right, they get on the bus.
And Compton High is blue.
Yep. And Dominguez. It's kind of neutral.
I just kind of thought it all fell into place as a coincidence.
No, they most of those guys from Westside Pyro went to the Centennial.
Yeah.
And that was the colors of the school was red with the Centennial
and
High.
And all the Compton Crips went to Compton High.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then their colors were blue.
Blue, yeah.
Yeah, that is an interesting... I thought it was a coincidence. I guess you from Compton, so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know that's how the Compton Crips and Bloods or Pyrus started, but like I said, when y'all start talking about the LA gangs in the 60s and the 70s,
but
I just shut up.
The colors weren't even relevant in the early 70s. The colors kind of came out.
No. They, like I said, it just started with the school colors.
Yeah.
Once they started.
Because back then, they all used to young blood.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It wasn't, what's happening, cuz? It wasn't nothing like that.
Yeah.
Those guys would see each other and fight just because. Or somebody coming to get somebody's jacket back. Or their boots, or their shoes, or whatever. And from the beginning of time, fighting over women.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
How do we level the playing field for all entrepreneurs? 55% of white businesses survive the startup phase, while only 4% of black businesses do the same. So I want every black entrepreneur to know about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have black ownership. This program gives black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field. From free business coaching to tailored training and extended free Shopify trial, Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive offer at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show.
Change the driving to work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This, all my uncle and them used to do is fight over this side of the, across Central. They fighting over abroad, or they fighting because they took Willie Mack's jacket. So we got to go back. So they formed this clique where it's all about us. We going to protect us against anybody. Yeah. And that's how they just jump into it.
Well, this goes right into the next topic. Another question on Instagram was, what street battles did Mob James have? And what about the war between the Fruit Towns and Mob Piru?
Well, my war battles was against everything that called itself a Crip in Compton at that time. My never had a war battle against no blood sets.
Yeah, that internal Piru conflict is more recent.
Yeah, way before, way after my time.
Yeah.
That's the Mob in Fruit Town. That's some new shit they're doing right now. But,
well, I know Fruit Town is going at it with Treetop. I didn't know.
Yeah,
it's never, also with Mob too.
I never heard of it. Okay. I never had a beef with Fruit Town or any Treetops, 151s, no Westside Pyrus, no nothing.
But there is all kind of internal conflict going on so much amongst the Pyrus.
And you got to look at it. The only reason why you have this is because I guess motherfuckers ain't got shit to do. They don't even wait to summertime no more to pick who they really want to fuck with now. And then, you know, going back to 2002 after Alton was killed, you got the thing with Ludus Park and the Mob, and then you got the Mob and Limehood, Mob and everybody is fighting everybody. Everybody is fighting everybody, which is let's say, is silly because Compton was never like that. I mean, everybody from each hood can go to everybody hood and kick it once upon a time. Now, you can't do that. So I never had a beef with Fruit Town. I have a lot of good friends from Fruit Town right now today. So whomever asked that question, I would say they need to get their information right before they ask what's going on, because Mob James ain't never had a beef with the Fruit Towns ever in his life.
So what was the main Crip set that you guys would go at it with back in the 70s?
The Santanas. The Santanas, Kelly Park.
Atlantic Drive.
Atlantic Drive.
In-hood.
No, in-hood was never a factor.
Yeah.
It was always, Santana was the major one
because
of Baby Gangsta.
Baby Gangsta
and Turtle. He had money, and he influenced some of the cats in his neighborhood, and he kept them straight. You know what I'm saying? So they was our main, whatchacallit, because they was the ones that really pretty much giving it back. You know what I'm saying? Palmin Oaks and all of them other cats was not
Palmin Oaks was some landlord guys.
Yeah, and it was so, not a fact.
And you basically had problems with people at school. And when he went to the summertime, it was because we used to get out of school in the summertime in June. And I swear, especially from the law enforcement point of view, every time that last week or 2 weeks of school, you knew it was going down.
It's only cracking.
You knew it was
because
going down.
Because you weren't going to see no one until September.
Until September. There's something about that in the football games.
Now, because your father was a cop, that's probably one reason why you never got involved in the gangs.
Correct.
That, but and, you were aware of all the gangs at the time.
I grew up and walked the streets just like they did. I played baseball at Kelly Park.
Were you ever tempted, though? Like, man,
no.
I want to be in a gang.
Never felt that peer pressure? Never even crossed. I never even, you know, I always knew I wanted to be in law enforcement. Well, eventually wanted to be an attorney is what I thought.
I can't say this, though. He always been a knucklehead. Him and his cousin, William.
Fletch.
Fletch.
He
Fletcher.
Came out there to Pacoima and started with those niggas. He was real cool with the two peas. My cousin that he's about to talk about, Fletch. That's where he was hanging out there. You remember he went out there and started having crisscross.
They were staying together. Him and Reggie was an item. They was bad. But a good thing, Pops kept him narrow and straight, and bam. See, his whole family, Giles, you never hear nobody speak on Giles. That's his uncle.
Yeah.
And his dad, everybody speak on his dad. Giles is so low key, he do his thing.
So how would you feel when your father was arresting some of these guys that you was going to school with, or that putting cases on people. Like, wouldn't they be mad at you? Your they daddy used to come to us.
No, I have never had that problem. They used to come to the house and sit in the living room talking to Reggie. We lived right there on Pine Street, right down the street. I mean, I was 19 years old, 20 years old when they finally said, okay, we got to get out of here, because my little sister was wilding out. I have a sister that's about 10 years old named Kim that was wilding out.
Hanging on the streets?
She went to Willowbrook. They wouldn't even take us in to Whaley. But my father went over up to Willowbrook Junior High School one time, which was a little ways. And my father was like, oh, Thornton, you know, she was having problems and stuff like that. They say, no. She's the goddamn leader. She's
of
the problem.
Of what?
Of whatever the clicks of the back is there.
Oh, okay.
And so he said, you know what? He had to move her out. And so my little sister's the reason that he finally got out of comp.
And to just elaborate on that, this how Reggie Wright Sr. was with all of us. I've never seen nobody that was so fair and uncut. If you fuck up and they say your name in this report, I'm going to come get you and take your ass to jail. If you don't be over here, you can't fuck up. And I won't have to come arrest your ass. Reggie done did this at the house so many times.
On your door.
Yeah, come on, James.
Yeah.
Alton, you know, we'll talk when we get down to the station.
Yeah.
And that's how he would do it.
And he would turn fair.
Reg, can I get a cigarette while you do this?
That's a unique relationship then, for police to have with the community, because that doesn't exist today.
No, it doesn't. And that's why I said in an earlier interview that he was doing community or policing community. But you got to remember, my family come from the Imperial Courts housing projects. My father was born and raised in Watts, in the projects, in Imperial, my mother and my father. And he got kicked out of L.A. Jordan, had to end up going to Compton High School, and that's where he ended up graduating from. And so I say that, but he was also, but this is where Reggie was. Reggie was ran the gym, they call it Baby Staples Centers down inside of the Imperial Court. He was the superintendent there. He had a basketball team called the Imperial Courts All-Stars that he took all over, you know, BCI programs, and took them all over the state. It was like what we know now as the traveling basketball and all of that. He was doing that with a team out of Watts back then. And so,
what years was that about?
Reggie did like Roy Hamilton, David Greenwood, and all of them from the 74 to about 80.
So he witnessed
82.
He witnessed kind of the early Crippen in the Imperial Court.
Oh, he knows all of that history. I mean, you know, he was deep in it because he was at the Imperial Court
and
housing.
Ulysses too.
My uncle, who also coached baseball
and baseball
and football.
For him and Gonzalez.
And so they. But my point being is that he was also the meter reader. Not the meter reader. He wasn't the meter. He was a little higher than the meter reader. Because my father didn't become in the law enforcement until he was about 28 years of age, which was a little bit late. He just retired not too long ago. But he was the one that worked for Edison that came and cut your lights off. He was the bill collector. They didn't have all the meter readers now where you can just turn it out from there. They had to come to your house and try to collect the money. If not, your lights get cut off. And so he built relationships with people because he wasn't that good at his job. You know, he would talk to people and be like, hey, you need to get this done. I got to come back, or this is how we need to do it. So this is how he built relationships with people, family. So that's why mainly most of the guys that was out there, mothers and fathers knew him. Mainly it was mothers, unfortunately.
This was in Watts, right?
This was in the Compton-Watts area. It was he had that whole area. And so that's why he built relationships with all of these people, where when he became in law enforcement, he had pretty much already knew who would be hanging out and who was there because of his job.
He knew who the asshole was. He knew who wasn't capable of doing what. Reggie knew. He knew our hood from the back of his
hand. And that was before law enforcement. They didn't know that. They hated. He always had a problem with what they call fraternization now. You know, with that. But they knew. But people in upper management knew he was effective. He was, you know, and he had a memory. I mean, this man had a memory out of this world. It's gone now. It takes him a minute to think. But back then, you'll tell him something about, and he'll tell you, oh, that's so-and-so. That's so-and-so. He's sitting on the block wall right now doing this, wearing this. Is how his reputation became named.
So how did your dad end up living in Compton then, if he was from Watts?
Everybody moved from the projects to the city of Compton.
Everybody's parents came from either.
I guess in the 70s, it was rough in the projects.
We lived on 150. We moved from. I never lived. My mama would get mad. She'd have a fit if she heard me say I lived in the project. I did live on the project. But I lived on 114th Street, which was right outside the projects. But, you know, we called it moving on up. I guess that was our Jeffersons moving to Compton.
Now, I heard you mention a Santana Block dude named Turtle. You knew Turtle?
Oh, my father still to this day wear a charm that Turtle gave him.
Is that right?
That eagle.
I thought Baby Gangsta gave it to him.
No, Turtle gave it to him.
Dang.
Yeah, Turtle gave
now,
it to
Turtle
him.
Now, Turtle moved to Compton from another state when he was a young kid.
The majority of all of them.
Yeah. And how did Turtle become the man in Santana?
He was one of them because of the game.
Usually the little, the smallest guys.
Let me, Jake.
Go ahead.
When the cocaine came to Compton, some of us knew, we looked at it, we know how to sell it. Some of the cats know how to rock it. Some of them cats, they can rock it, they can sell it, and they knew how to save their money.
You knew how to cut it and do
the
all
whole
that.
Nine.
Yeah.
The whole nine. And they was making money. Though you could tell those guys were shining like a motherfucker. Baby Gangsta and all of them. So the ones that didn't make it was just in the hood doing their thing. But the ones that did, like Turtle, I remember that white, was it a 65 Chevy he had with Bad Habit Rabbit on it?
Yeah.
Pissed me off. He had a perm at the time. I seen him one day. I was heated. But we had the same fucking opportunity as they had. We had fucking bags like this and shit. And we just didn't know what the fuck we was doing. So the way we sold it, we was giving it away for $500.
And they didn't know how to rock it up.
$10,000 off of the shit we was
Even if you're dealing with cocaine, it's still a business. You still got to have the talent sell it, make the profit.
And we didn't have that.
To go re-up.
We didn't have that.
You know, it's still a skill.
If you look at all the guys that I knew that were successful in the game, from Armando to Fink, they were all from Pat Johnson. All of these motherfuckers was probably about 5'7", weighed 150, 160 pounds.
Yeah.
My point was, it was always a little small, thin, short guy that had the business mind that made it happen. I don't know if they were so less intimidating to deal with because, you know, their stature or whatever. But every dude that I know that was, Huncho was about the only one, when you mentioned his name, Wayne Day, that was a big dude. That was kind of was connected.
He definitely had the skill.
He had the connection.
And the connection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now let me ask you, would you say the Santanas had maybe extra skills or edge when it came to hustling?
Yeah.
Back then?
Oh, yeah. Turtle, no, they were. They did, and then
they had the...
Because all it takes is two or three guys.
Yeah. And they had Mondo.
The background, they had other people outside of them, and then they was taken out of town way before we even thought about going to Denver. You know what I'm saying? They was already gone. And then one thing about those cats was, man, to do your dealings and then to deal with the gangbanging shit at the same time, they did them both.
Yeah.
And they wasn't, no, nigga, I'm making money. Nigga, let me get over here. I ain't praising these cats, but I'm giving credit where credit is due. Those cats was on the block with Uzis doing their thing with money in their pocket. I'm talking about Cadillacs all up and down. What's the street? God damn it.
Pick or Oaks?
No. They Santa Fe? That on Santa, up Rosecrans and their little spot.
Pearl, Santa Fe?
No, I come to it sooner later.
Okay.
But those cats was on that one block 24/7, ready to go. And every time we went down there, we had to deal with some cats. And it was we were fired upon. We were shot at. And it wasn't no just, let's go over here and get these niggas. It was always an issue. And that was the fun thing about Santana's.
And even from the Piru side, and, you know, I'm giving a guy credit that James probably don't like too much. I don't know. But Glenn, we called him Glencoe Zeke. It was Zeke. And I called him always Glencoe. He was a Piru dude that grew up, that was one of Buntry's closest friends at one time that was connected. But he went over and dealt with the South Sides. And that's why we called him Glencoe, because that's where, you know, one of the main streets over in South Side, Compton Crill. Zeke was always a connect. He had the end with Fink.
And that's who was brought, that's who kept him.
Exactly.
Going.
That's my point.
So
you
that
know?
Was the connect.
And that was the connect. So I was trying to say, this is how the Blood and the Crip were connecting with, you know, was connected. And they would work together. They would only fuck with Zeke pretty much. But he can go over there in Southside and get whatever he needed.
The
bring it back.
Problem yeah. with any Crip gang in Compton. And this Crip gang, which is Santana's, they were like right in the middle of the. You got Fruit Town and all these. Sets
they were
right
in the
here.
Middle, Santana.
Then here they go. You got Am Street, and from Am Street on down, you got nothing but Bloods. Yeah. And they actually, they did their thing. Yeah. They represented their shit. They didn't. Man, that shit shut down. No, they was the only ones. I give them their props on that. And they wouldn't go away. They wouldn't go away. For real. I'm serious. We had issues with those cats for years. And I say the only Crip gang out there that was at that time in the early 80s was them.
Have you made peace with any of the Santana blocks as you got older? And shook hands or had a meal?
No. Mm. No. I haven't. I mean, associate with people like that. I mean, I think...
I'm sure there's some OG Santanas that feel the same way you feel now.
Probably do. And
right?
Let me just say
that they didn't have too much problem because Gangster had a goddamn shop pretty much in the hood, right where the Compton Swap Meet was.
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah. Right on Long Beach Boulevard.
Gangster with the little shop. I see
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
What's up, Gangster? Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
He had a muffler shop.
And the reason because of that, because he was going through some shit
with his wife,
the lady passing and all that. He just getting out the feds, all that. Man, motherfuckers grew up and ain't got time for the beef.
Yeah.
You feel me? So, but just say if that was 20 years
it
later,
yeah.
you wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
And he knew he wouldn't be posted there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even him, he ain't stupid. That's like me going to post up right there before they build that bridge over on Rosecrans.
Yeah.
Ain't happening. You ain't walking down that street.
Yeah. Even though Treetop was right on the other side of the bridge.
Right there on the other side of the tracks. Yeah. But ain't nobody going, I'm not walking right there.
Yeah, you're not walking across
but
the tracks.
Yeah, those guys, man, was...
And Compton is pretty much set up by tracks, the railroad tracks, which is Willowbrook or Alameda. It's pretty much where everybody knew their boundaries were.
Yeah.
Well, that's what divide the east side from the west side.
My
was the tracks.
Always, I every Blood said, I went in and I kicked it. Fruit Towns, Duck, and all of those cats, we've always kicked it. Me and Lee Ford used to hang together all the time on Peach.
Yeah. And then, let me just say this. Mob James had a Blood party every Friday night or Saturday
every
night.
Every Friday night.
Friday night.
Thursday,
every
Fridays
set.
Saturdays.
Every set.
Every set, all the way from San Diego.
Where would the party be at?
At his house. At his house. 400 to 500. It was so bad. I used to love it. Because I'll go over there at
as
the end of the
officer,
as a cop.
Because
you know what I did? Go over there, just jacket niggas coming out of the party. They all had guns on them. It was an easy gun arrest.
Why didn't just let them have their day and celebrate?
Man.
And
that wasn't, it was Cat and Robin.
Man, so I was
that cop.
So he was coming up there, hemming
them
up.
I would get him.
Come the police come, and they tell me I had to shut Club Mob down. I don't have
tell you,
permit.
But don't got doggone neighbors. I was going to senior citizen block club meetings every day. Like, how are y'all letting this go on?
You know what? It was so reckless. And I admit it now.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. The guys were so, they all respected me.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I told them, y'all party in my shit, do whatever you want. Don't spit on my floor and don't drop no cigarette. Other than that, I don't give a fuck.
I mean, he had a big backyard, too.
And we would have football games. We was playing Emerald Hills every Sunday. And all the San Diego cats would come down. And just, man, it was just, we do what we want when we get to this nigga house. On Bloods, nigga, I'm coming. And then you'll just, They got 40 cars.
So Emerald Hills blood from Southeast San Diego would come to Compton?
All the way to Compton just to play football against us. And then after we play football, they go to their car, get a case of Hennessy, and we all start getting fucked up. Now, they would stay and kick it. They'd come Saturday, party Sunday. Sunday morning, those that was drunk, fucked up in the den or whatever, got up and went home.
The football games is how our boy Heron got killed. He left the park at Gonzales Park.
We was playing the West Side. We was playing the Bounty Hunters.
L.A. Bounty Hunters?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was some San Diego's y'all playing.
No, we was playing the Bounty Hunters.
Yeah, from Gonzales Park.
Okay. Heron got that call.
Okay.
On that one.
Now, you also mentioned two other Crip sets. Both of y'all mentioned Kelly Park and Atlanta Drive. But before I ask you about that, I just interviewed some Emerald Hill Bloods because I was in San Diego a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And I just posted that on my channel. So for anyone that's interested in one of my latest interviews, go visit Street TV, and you can check out some of the Emerald Hill Bloods that I interviewed over there in their neighborhood. But you also mentioned...
Is Tata from that neighborhood? Is that where Tata, Lloyd Lake, did it here?
I don't
know. Tata, Lloyd Lake. I don't know Tata.
No, I'm not familiar. But it's Southeast San Diego. Yeah. They up on the hill. They call it Uptown. This is the pinky and the index finger, which makes a U, is their sign because of Uptown.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
So I had this brother giving me the history of the Emerald Hill Bloods.
Those are my cats, man.
the dude even mentioned. He said, "Man, they know us. They know us in L.A."
Yeah, man. Hey, all them cats straight pimping.
Yeah,
straight pimping, making their money, and them dudes was doing it good.
Well, go check out that Emerald Hill interview on Street TV. But you guys also mentioned Kelly Park Compton Crips and Atlantic Drive Compton Crips. Yeah. Were they kind of a factor in terms of the conflict with the mob back then?
Kelly Park, yes. Kelly Park had some riders in it.
That's where Eazy-E from.
Enough.
Yeah, and they had alignment. They made alignment with the how they used to go, Southside Atlantic and Kelly Park neighborhood. It was alignment, something like that, where they even went together. But they mainly fought with Santana, to be honest. They had a big, we used to call it the Compton Massacre, Well, about four,
and they was taking them down.
They about four or five of them got killed one day at Kelly Park in a big shootout. Potato Head Paul Watson.
Man,
is still
actually,
on death row behind that.
Buntry went to jail when they started that, came out with the CC Riders.
Yeah, well, that was Hunch. That's so funny.
Now
that's so funny. Let me just say this. I did a crip from Watts. Hunch will start these niggas and united them to become the CC Rider. After his brother got killed.
Doing so much shit out there.
With the drug
hurt
gang,
each other.
Too.
Yeah, so he came thinking.
Kenny Crow, his brother?
My father's one of the rest of the guy that killed his brother on that.
Trying to fix the hill. But my brother Buntry went to the park where they was having this meeting. And it's a crazy-ass story.
Which park? Kelly Park?
Kelly Park.
It's Kelly Park when they was forming CC Riders, right?
Oh, no. What park was that? Because we had to tape it. No, that was at Compton High School. On the football field.
No.
Football field.
Oh, yeah, because they got pulled over.
That was on the football field at Compton High School.
Wait a minute. Now,
I got the whole tape of that.
A bunch of them in the car?
Oh, no.
So they in the car.
When they formed it.
And when they about to draw down and let them have it, the police see them.
Yeah.
So they takes off. They would have got away like a motherfucker. But this Mexican lady was in front of them, didn't speak English, and they was telling her to get the fuck out the way, blowing the horn the whole nine. She didn't know what the fuck they was talking about. But anyway, why the fuck y'all didn't bag up and go around them? They didn't have no fucking reverse. So the police, 10 fucking minutes sitting there, police catch them, pull up, they all jumped out the car. And this one, Alton caught the assault on the police officer, the dog came up under the house. He choked the dog out, so they gave him a tip on the dog.
Yeah, the canine considered an officer.
It's an officer. So, and that was real funny because everybody was supposed to be in on this. And it was supposed to be, they supposed to got attacked from each corner, each witch call. Because if y'all come out on this side or come out where the court building at, or where, if y'all come out that way, they getting hit. You know what I'm saying? But no, they went on and did them. And it cost them 9 years.
Yeah, that CC Rider went on for a little while. They united for a minute.
It wasn't nothing though.
Yeah, it didn't make. Yeah,
it wasn't nothing.
They were united for a minute though.
Well, that reunited, not took over.
They
were. CC Rider was supposed to be something that took over Compton.
Yeah.
They thought they were gonna come in and shut one hood down at a time. It wasn't happening. Y'all weren't ready for no shit like that.
So you saying that they were consolidating to be against the Pyrus?
Yeah. All together, come together, stop.
Because they were killing
shit.
Each other.
They was knocking down the OGs. They weren't hurting.
Because half the Compton Crips don't get along with the other half.
That's why I said they were killing each other.
They was taking each other out.
The shooting you just mentioned that landed homeboy on death row from Santana Block, right?
Yeah, they called him Paul Watson, Potato Head Paul.
What year was that? And were you an officer at that time?
Oh, yeah, I was working. I worked at that homicide scene.
Ain't too many.
94,
like,
93.
What is it, a quintuple homicide?
It was about four or five people got shot at the park that day.
And all of them had...
Hunter, I'll tell y'all a story right quick. To promote being a donor. I can't think of his name now. Mondo. It wasn't Mondo. Well, anyway, he was one of the main shot callers over there at Atlantic Drive. The reason why, and this boy is walking around good today, his mama refused to take him off of life support because she was trying to wait for a donor to give up his parts organs, be an organ donor. And this boy, you know, he's still not all there, but this boy's still walking around today from Atlantic Drive because his mama was trying to wait for an organ donor. And he came through with that. The doctors were telling him he was going to be dead. One of the main shot callers, Mondo? Can't think of that boy's name, but he was one of the main dudes over there at Atlantic Drive to this day that got shot up in that.
During that same shooting by Potato
shooting.
Head.
Yeah.
Allegedly Paul, by Potato Head.
That nigga in jail on death row.
Everybody's allegedly me.
Yeah, no, but you got caught coming from the scene in the car. It wasn't like one of those. They got caught.
I'm sure. Was he the only one that went down?
It was about three or four of them that got.
But he's probably the only one on death row from Santana.
I have to call senior on that. I don't remember. My memory not good with those niggas.
All right. And real quick before we move on to the next topic, you mentioned Eazy-E being from Kelly Park.
Kelly Park.
He basically was spearheaded the whole gangster rap. I would say gangster rap label.
CB4, yep.
He started Ruthless Records in, what, 87, 88? And it was that Kelly Park money that financed it, right?
Yeah, it is a big misconception about that. It was cocaine money. It was mainly just weed, though. He was a big-time weed.
You can make some good money if you're selling, like, pounds.
Well, back then, because, you know, an ounce, if you take it somewhere, was $150 somewhere else.
Yeah, but the weed in 87, you had Thai bud.
Yeah, the cheap
stuff. And you had indica bud, right? What else?
That was good. When nobody
was
looking at it.
There was no chronic. There was no kush.
No. You had seeds. Stress.
Yeah, you had stress. What else was there? Stress. Thai?
They were still Thai. Burning.
Thai was if you was lucky. Thai was the best. That was the OG then. Yeah, that Thai. Oh, man.
Chocolate Thai. So he was making his money off of that?
Yeah, that's mainly what he was making. Yeah.
Man, you got to sell a lot of that to have the money.
They made the deal real quick, you know, but he had some street money.
Yeah.
He was a hustler.
My boy Killer Rob was making $250 a day at school selling at Dominguez, selling single joints.
Yeah, $5. Yeah, have them all pre-rolls.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, some pre-rolls.
They're already rolled.
Yeah, pre-rolls. Yeah.
All right. Our next question off of Instagram was the whole El Rey Theater incident in 1995. Where the brother from Rolling 60s got stomped to death. I think his name was Bo.
Oh, well, I know him as Kelly Jamerson.
Kelly Jamerson. And the question is, how did that situation from the guy that got killed from 60s not escalate into something larger with Death Row Records?
Big U will say because he was out. Wasn't out.
Well, this was, in the 90s.
This is what happened. He came, allegedly, he was on the DJ's guest list. DJ Quick was having this big problem with MC8 at the time because the G wasn't in him, right? And so Quick had just got off stage performing and they were walking by. And then MC8, you know, because him and Quick had that major dissing going on, and he was just hollering at him and, you know, started pointing at Quick and disrespecting Quick. And then the melee started between everybody, just the Pyrudes and pretty much any Quicks that will get, or any Crips that will get involved. And that's how he got stumped out. Now,
well, that guy wouldn't have got stumped out like that if the other cats, whoever was with him, didn't leave, run. Because they was fighting.
Yeah, they were fighting.
And if them other cats wouldn't have left and ran, I was over there by the stage with Suge.
Yeah.
And all you seen was bottles and all kind of shit being thrown.
It was a big melee.
Yeah, chairs and all that
kind of shit was being thrown all over the place. So you excuse me.
Suge wasn't there, was he?
Suge was on the stage.
He was on stage. And I was right there. When he was on stage, I was right there watching his back. So when all that shit went off, the bar was, if you're facing the stage, the bar was to the right. So Timmy, Hen Dog, Quick, was it Donzelli, quite a few people
but
was over
there. The bodyguard that was with him that eventually died, big heavy set dude from St. Louis. I can't think of his name.
That guy, and I said again, If his homeboys wouldn't have left him, I don't think it would have been that serious. But when the fight broke out and it was just motherfuckers on top of each other, and motherfuckers was getting beat up.
Yeah.
So was he targeted or
no? Jamerson?
Jamerson.
He was just in the area.
It was with MCA.
And then you know the Crip and the Pyro thing kicked in.
Yeah.
Is what mainly happened. I can't even say that Jamerson was with MC8 because I know, you know, because I got sued and everybody got sued. I know that he was on the guest list.
No, it was game, it was everything in there after that.
Yeah.
Because when the bottles and shit started getting thrown, that was Quick and them throwing shit back and forth at each other. And you hear, what's that? Nigga on Bloods, nigga on woo woo woo, nigga on Crip, nigga on woo woo woo. And it was just. It happened like that fast.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, those doors swung open. Motherfuckers running out of there. And when motherfuckers running toward their cars, you heard people saying, help, help, help him. He helped him. He's still down. His homeboys was gone. Everybody skirted up out of there. And the next day, they said somebody was killed. Then woo woo. 6 months later, 2 months later, Tupac wrote a song about it. Dad, how you say I killed somebody?
No, not Tupac.
DJ Quick.
Then DJ Quick. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. And
I'm not a gangster.
Yeah.
I'm not a gangster.
But that wasn't 2 months later. That was a couple of years later.
But he still broke the motherfucker.
Yeah. But by that time, he was gone from
us. I don't even want to put our shit in it like that. Yeah. But, you know, motherfuckers got to point fingers at the wrong motherfuckers and was saying such and such did all this here bullshit. And only a few people went to the police. They had to go to the police station behind that shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, how do a motherfucker know the police know his name, his name, his name? That's all y'all got to give?
Were there cameras rolling inside there that captured the whole thing?
No.
Wait, L-Ray Theater did not have cameras?
Man, we're talking about the 90s.
Everybody, cameras were still out?
No, they wasn't 90, like that
this
then.
This was 95.
95.
No cameras. Not one single camera.
No. They didn't have them. Cameras wasn't that popular back then. Anyway, thank God. I was over security then, but I was just had the door. The security that I was hired, they had their own. It was the house security, thank God.
The L-Ray Theater?
Yeah, which they all took off. It was a bunch of LAPD cops and all of that. They got in trouble because they mainly...
Do you fault the security for not doing anything?
Well, you could have broke it up sooner. Anytime somebody get stomped out, you know, you're supposed to stop it quicker. So, I have some concerns. But my people were mainly the artists. And so I got my client out. And Suge got out real quick.
Well, you couldn't blame Suge on that one.
No, Suge was on
and
stage.
I give him credit
he was
that.
Trying to stop it. He was like, he thought the party was going to still go on. He was like, I said, nigga, let's go. Let's go now. He was still, it's okay, Red, just stop. No, let's go.
The place was tossed up.
Yeah.
He was still trying to party. It was chaos.
Yeah, he was still trying to party. But that's Suge loved a party.
So basically, nothing really escalated.
Corrupt caught a little trouble. We had to go, and I remember me and Suge going over the next day in Silver Lake and meeting with, that's when we found out the FBI and all of them was following us around like crazy because they jacked us, when we was meeting with, Corrupt and Daz because they were scared shitless because they were getting all the threats and all of that.
Why the 60s? And I think that's what you're saying. Why the 60s didn't start a gang war?
Well, that's what I'm about to explain. That's why we went and met, and they were upset, you know, with Corrupt and Daz and putting pressure on them. But I don't know if Suge ever gave some money to Corrupt and Daz to fill to their hood or what. But I know they were catching a lot of heat.
Daz was a 62. I know Corrupt was.
No, they were the partners. He's from Long Beach, but they were a partner. Daz from New Orleans, or Memphis, or Mississippi,
but
or somewhere.
He's
from Philadelphia, but he was up under the 60 car with the Broomfields and Big U and all of them. And so they had a little affiliation with that.
So I guess in answer to this guy's question, somehow it all got worked out.
It got worked out. We never had no problems after that. And with the 60s after that, never had no problems. And eventually we all know that Suge started hanging with the 60s with Big U once he came home. Yeah, so.
Yeah, so obviously there was no problem.
Yeah.
For $80,000, it better not be.
That's later. That's later.
Oh, it was?
That's much later.
All right. Well,
Big U was in jail at the time.
All right. So let's move on to our final topic. And this comes in from another Instagram follower. Woo! This is a really controversial question. Would there be less police shootings if black people complied more with the police?
You want to go first?
Man, oh, man. I already know what Reggie's going to say.
I told y'all about two episodes ago that y'all got to teach your kids to comply, and we can deal with the cops and go down to the station later.
That's a sad case because I've taught both my kids how to conduct themselves in the car. Comply, they're 13 man. Years old and 14 years old, and I'm telling them, when I get pulled over in this truck,
yes, sir.
This is
no,
what you
sir.
Guys need to
but
do.
But see, this is what, and you're going to get that type of bullshit from them whether you like it or not.
That's
whether
not
you,
true.
Wait a minute. Whether you reply or not,
that's
bullshit.
Not true.
The police are going to do what
true.
They want when they feel like it.
That's not
now,
true.
Now, for us, standing out on the corner and the police come and pull you over, let me see your ID license. Why bullshit with them and play games and want to fight? You're not going to win this fight.
That's usually you know the only time you have problems when niggas dirty.
Yeah, so, no. No, even the ones that's clean. There's no need for that type of conversation. Just give them what they want to be done with it and then let it roll.
Well, that's complying.
Sometimes it don't work like that. Whether you comply or not, you got this asshole-ass cop going to want to push you in your back and be all rough with you and shit. So, man, that can go any way, any kind of way. It all depends on what type of officer you get that's pulling you over. Or you can say no, Reggie. I'm not going to allow you to turn your back on me today.
I'm not turning my back. I'm just telling you no.
I mean, we have lots of examples.
Because we have, I mean, you have some that if they done told you four or five times, get your ass off this block, move, keep moving, you don't stand here. And that's usually just because, the lady in front of the house, old grandma, is complaining and keep calling down to the station, to the watch commander, why won't they move James from in front of our house? Okay. He out there selling that stuff.
So now, when you come and ask me that, I'm going to tell you, man, I ain't going nowhere.
Exactly.
You can't make me leave. And then you're going to say, I want your ID, get on my car, and don't you move. Man, you can't tell me where to fucking move to.
Well, in Compton, we have a municipal code section for blocking the sidewalk.
We got examples where people did not deserve to get shot that are on camera. Oscar Grant. We've all seen the Fruitvale platform video. The cop actually ended up saying, oh, I thought that was my taser. You know?
Bullshit. That's an old senior citizen cop.
Oscar took one in the back.
Yeah, yeah.
What about Philando?
But he said he messed up.
What about Philando?
And I believe that old man messed up on that one.
No, I don't believe that.
I believe he did.
No, because tasers really weren't that popular.
Y'all got to remember, cops are just, be just as scared as some people, especially if that training is not that well.
But your taser's on your weak side, your gun's on your strong side. So how do you grab your taser and think it's your gun or vice versa? How do you grab your gun and think it's your taser? They're on opposite sides, right?
Hey, he was wrong. He was wrong.
What about Philando Castile? The guy says, hey, I'm going to go give you my ID right now.
But I do
kid
have a
in the
gun
back
on
seat.
Me.
I do have a gun. It's legal. I work for the school district. And he just aired his ass out. That's all on camera, too.
So I know which situation you're talking about, but I don't know. But he had back tactics, and that's the good thing. Y'all should, especially living in California, the police officer standing in training is a lot better than you have in some of your states out in the South. And so they know how to order the people out of the car. You just pretty much freeze the situation, wait till you get some backup, or you just get people out of the car, and you try to slow the situation down.
You know what I think?
It's how you're supposed to do it. But the most recent issue that we're talking about is the incident, I think it was in Florida or somewhere, they just shot the lady three or four times.
Yeah, she was on the ground, I guess.
Yeah. We don't know if he's trying to say, because the investigation knew that she was reaching for something. That's not, I'm not going to be here and try to justify the shooting because we don't know the facts. Because she could have had a gun in her waistband. We don't know because they're not saying. I don't know if they said she's unarmed.
I bet you she didn't have a gun, though.
We don't know.
I bet you she didn't.
My whole point to that, though, is if she would have complied, she'd still be alive. If she would have just let the man frisk her, do whatever, and still out there trying to talk shit, resist.
You used to be a police officer.
You know what?
Don't you think that today when I go to work, I'm going to find at least five people I stop. Two of them going to be combative. Two of them ain't going to listen to what I tell them to do. You don't go to work with that mentality?
I don't.
I'm going to have to get aggressive with somebody?
I didn't. And I don't remember really being in cars with people like that. But I'm not saying that it doesn't happen that some people, because I don't know what a person's mindset is. But my point to that is, if you have a good management at the police department, that cop is going to eventually get weighed out. We knew the ones that was heavy-handed. Yeah. That's what we used to call our aggressive. And after three, four, five complaints of that same type of situation, Trust me, their ass got moved to community fairs. They got put in helicopters. They got reassigned. If not pretty much told, hey, don't get in another one or you're going to get dealt with.
Yeah.
Well, so if you have good management and you know, fortunately, I was at a department where we were 50% black and white. And so, the white officers couldn't run rapid as they do in some departments.
Yeah.
I'm not here to say that there's not bad officers on the street or heavy-handed or aggressive. The most heavy-handed aggressive officers that I worked with were black, to be honest. But
they're learning that because that's just the culture of the police, not because of they're black. They're absorbing the culture of law enforcement based on the officers.
Or they feel that that's what they're supposed to. It could be that from the training or their guy, or it could be because they thought that was their way of making a difference until they found how the department would turn on it. Because, you know, like I had two grandmothers that lived in the city of Compton. I didn't have a problem because, you know, with guys hanging in front of their house and stuff like that because of James. But my grandmother eventually had to move out of the city of Compton because two people got killed in front of her house. And so if she wasn't living over there by the McDonald's, And the people that they were allowing to come over to their house, she might, you know, would have died living in the city of Compton and wouldn't have had to move out.
Well, my biggest problem with these heavy-handed officers is that I've seen at least a dozen videos where they are pursuing a white person or a white woman.
And they treat them
and
different.
And I'm saying to myself, yeah, this is lasting far too long. If this person was black, they would have got aired out already.
Down.
White women jumping out of the car, in the car, out the car, dancing. White guys just talking all kind of crazy mess. And
fuck off and all that other shit.
Well,
and let me say that shit.
Yeah.
We don't.
I do believe
that's
race,
one thing about black. We don't do that too much.
Race has to play a role in this.
But even though, let me say this. And this is to all black cats out there that get pulled over. At some point, we, as black men, have to learn. You got to understand the system and roll with it because we can't beat the system, no matter what we do. I had to learn. Stop running your fucking mouth to the police.
That's all I'm saying.
Do what you do. Listen to me. Do what you do, and then let them go about their business. I've learned that. But then, in between time, you get that one that ain't got no love for you like that. Like Graves. This motherfucker was ready to do me in handcuffs because I didn't want to do a goddamn gang video with them at their police station. You feel me? So what is my choices? Either stay in this motherfucking cell and let them come in here and get me. I do it. You know what I'm saying? So you have to say, put all your pride to the side and say, okay, I understand, officer. Yes, sir, officer. This is what they want to hear, how you talk to them.
I mean, I guess you're talking about saving lives, but at the same time, police officers need to be trained to deal with the mouth, with the cursing, deal with the disrespect. That doesn't mean
should.
I pull out my gun and blow you away.
One thing I learned about dealing with police officers is if I come off aggressive before they even say anything, now the whole situation is aggressive. If they come off aggressive, I don't have to get aggressive because he's an asshole. Still reply. Still say, yes, sir. You mind telling me what I'm pulled over for? Then the cool thing about that is we don't know our laws on the streets on why they not supposed to fuck with you if you ain't committed a crime. I be watching all these shit on this phone here. They chewing the police out. Well, officer, do you know what a 308 is? Swoop 0.6? And I don't know what the code is.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
But
those are stupid cops because I can get in your pockets and I can get in you and have you arrested for pretty much anything.
So what's the right?
Because they don't know how to do it.
Do you have the right to pull me over or just walk on the sidewalk and stop and say, give me your ID?
I can ask you.
Yeah, but you don't have to give an ID.
But I don't have to give it to you, though,
I can ask you. But then I'm going to find a reason to take your ass to jail.
Why would you do that?
You blocking the sidewalk.
No, I'm walking. You pull me over.
You said walking. I'll find a reason.
See, that's what
much.
I'm saying.
I'll find
you
a reason to legally detain you.
I mean, if you really want to fight it, because all he's going to do is rack up some paperwork. His superiors are going to say, what you got on this guy? Nothing. And you go get out the following
That's
morning.
That's how you learn not to even go there because you can't.
If you ain't got no warrants, why not just get the ID? Why fight him about it? And why not just comply and say, here, right,
the principality
you ain't got
of it.
The pen. Yeah.
The principality of it.
And then you can fight it later.
One time I'll tell a quick story. I got pulled over and I had a legal gun in the back seat locked. And they asked me, can we go in that box and look at your gun to make sure it's unloaded? Because you can't have it loaded in the state of California. Yeah. I said, no, you can't go in that box. And they made it a 45-minute ordeal. They said, just give us the key and let us look. Now, I could have just been Mr. Nice Guy. Here's the key. Go take a look. But I have a right to my privacy.
Exactly.
I covet my privacy. So I said, no, 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 no. I had to sit there. Then they handcuffed me. It took an hour before one of the superior officers said, you got to let him go, you know? But I could have got out of there in 5 minutes, right, Reggie?
You would have been gone.
I would have been gone.
Unless the gun was stolen.
No,
the serial number was scratched out.
No. This is a complete legit gun. But the point is, I could have been out of there in 5 minutes. Here's the key. Go check it out. But I'd rather exercise my rights, maintain my privacy, and deal with it for an hour, hour and a half, get handcuffed for 30 minutes, and, you know.
How many of us know that? How many of us know our rights? That's why you really getting fucked out there on the streets, because we don't know our rights. And the police know that.
I'm going to give one right now.
And you know you ran across a good officer.
No.
You did. And let me just tell you why. Because all he had to do was say, as he was approaching your car, he saw you placing a gun inside of the lockbox, and locked it.
Well, he immediately figured out, oh, this is a professor from Cal State Long Beach. Yeah. This guy is a professional. He's no chump off the streets. Exactly. In fact, when I opened up my glove box, he said, that box of bullets in your glove compartment is probable cause. I said, no, it's not, because he wanted to really go in there. His partner said, let's get the bolt cutters. Let's call in the bolt cutters and break that thing open. I said, y'all do what you got to do, but I'm not freely giving you the key so you can go search my gun. I have no criminal record. My gun is registered. Do what y'all want to do.
And you know, if that gun was in the front seat, they could arrest you because it's called arms reach. You know, they're saying that to most people. Because you don't have the bullets in there, but all of that's in arm reach, it's still considered loaded.
That's
James' point. That we don't, you know, most people don't know that.
I don't think it being in the front seat is illegal. All right. It's still locked.
It's called
it's unloaded and it's locked.
And the bullets. But the point was, because the bullets is in arm's reach.
In the glove compartment?
In the glove box.
All right, Alex, can you give me and the viewers, the people that's listening, one law that we all should know?
Here's one that I think everyone should exercise. You never have to show your ID to a law enforcement officer unless you're driving a motor vehicle. If you're a pedestrian, if you're walking through the mall, if you're sitting in the park, you never have to show an ID. Only if you're driving a car or a motorcycle or a motor vehicle when you get pulled over.
You know, it's a law that says that you must have, if you're 18 years of age, that you must have a California or an ID.
You don't have to show your ID.
But I didn't say that. I didn't say, did you know? Yeah, to get to it. But did you know you're supposed to have
it? Yeah, when you turn 18, you're supposed to go to the DMV and get your ID.
And have it in your possession. Yeah, that's a law.
And I believe that's before, so that you can get drafted in case there's a war. And everyone knows who you are.
No, it's not a federal law. It's a state law.
I know, but I think each, just like, it's kind of not, it's not federal, but it is kind of federal. It's like alcohol. The feds made every state make it 21. Mm-hmm. Some states were 18, 17. Even though it's not federal, it is a federal law that drinking is 21 and over.
Yeah.
But you don't have to show your ID to a police officer.
No, I didn't say that.
Yeah.
I was just saying that I would just jump back on it by saying that most people don't even know that you're supposed to have an ID.
I think everybody should read up on that and try to learn that law, and then the police should stop.
But please, don't become combative.
But that can create combative situation where I tell an officer, I'm not showing you my ID. Why can't the officer just say, all right, I'll respect your right? It's never that easy, Reggie.
It's never
that easy. Why you don't want to show me your ID?
What are you hiding from me? Exactly.
Are you on the run?
Yeah.
You got warrants? Are you a criminal? I mean,
have I committed a crime?
No, you're just sitting in the park, minding your business.
Y'all just better hope a goddamn camera or somebody got a cell phone.
Do you suspect me of committing crime? This is all I hear him say. And no, I mean, you can videotape anywhere. You can stand anywhere you want. But they come with some different shit. and then they try to take that law from you.
If you ain't sharp on your game, they're going to bulldoze right over your rights. Yeah. I used to open carry here in California. It became illegal like in 2013 or 14. I'd be sitting in the Starbucks patio with my strap, holster.
Let me clarify that. Yeah. Open carry, a loaded firearm?
No, open carry means it's not loaded.
You have
a magazine on the other side.
Because you know who caused that problem for the loaded firearm being a problem?
What's that?
The Black Panther Party.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that was
with the shotguns.
Yeah, that Ronald Reagan changed the laws.
Yeah.
That didn't allow them to be armed. I mean, they walked right into the state.
You can be armed. It just better be no ammunition in the gun.
Yeah, but what they were doing at that time was legal.
Yeah, it was legal.
They had shotguns, and they were at the Capitol.
Yeah.
But open carry was legal in California, meaning you can carry your gun as long as it's not loaded.
As long as it's visible.
You can have your bullets holstered on the opposite side.
Yeah.
They made that illegal in 2014. But I used to open carry, walk through the market, go to Starbucks, and people would call the police. This guy's walking around here with a gun. And they would pull up on me. After a while, they knew who I was. But you got to let them, you put your hands up, they want to go check it, they can check it. They just want to make sure it's not loaded.
Yeah.
But then they made it illegal, you know. So I used to tell people all the time, hey, you can open carry in the state of California, Texas. But you can open carry in the state of Texas right now. Fortunately for some people, but I feel like unfortunately, they're trying to infringe on our gun rights, and they made it illegal like 4 or 5 years ago.
And they got to do something about the training of these people with guns, because it was a situation where this white girl just chased down this a guy at a hit and run, doing a hit and run, and shot and killed him. Oklahoma, I think it was, the state of Oklahoma, where these people with the with the rights to carry your guns and stuff is
well, you got to self train, because there's no mandate that you have to go practice shooting your gun.
They need to train when to use, not how to use, when, because this poor young girl she's gonna go to jail for a long time, thinking she was doing the right thing.
Well, I got a question for y'all off the topics. What's you heard anything about the truce that's going on right now? Is it?
I know that it's been quiet in certain areas in L.A., but in other areas, there was just a shooting yesterday.
Still at it.
In the 40s neighborhood, there was a shooting yesterday. In 40s Crip neighborhood, four people got hit.
And that's the misconception. It was just certain areas where the truce was on anyway, right?
Well, it wasn't assigned to an area, but the people that were at that march were mostly from the West Side.
Correct.
West Side hoods, you know, H-Ray, 60s. There were some Inglewood families there. There were some Rolling 40s there. There were people from the East Side, but it was, when you looked at the crowd,
it was mainly West Side.
It was mostly West Side Crips.
Yeah.
And that was a good thing, but I don't know.
Anytime you got brothers not killing each other, it's a good thing.
So, I don't know. We'll come back to that question next week.
I think we should keep an update on that so everybody will know. Because to me, it's kind of like faded away. You don't hear no more about Nipsey no more. You don't hear no more about the truce. So, I mean, is people not interested in knowing what's really going on with that situation? Or?
Well, Alex would say law enforcement want to keep it going so they can stay jobs. He don't know they can make money off DUI arrests and just get reassigned.
Hey,
go get the DUI arrests, domestic violence.
Gangbangers are a commodity.
Gang enforcement detail are putting their kids through college right now, though.
Oh, man, but they do it somewhere else, writing tickets. They just get reassigned.
If there's a reduction in crime,
they'll get reassigned.
Get reassigned, but can the chief argue, I want to hire more cops like they do all the time?
Yeah, because I had 5 traffic accidents involving DUIs. So I want to set up some DUI.
But we got 50% less crime than there was 10 years ago. So why do you need more cops? You know, it's just, it doesn't make sense.
It's to give them
jobs. I'm just trying to say, cops are mainly done by the amount of people that's in the area.
You don't want
to
put all them white people up in unemployment.
next week, maybe
it's Mexicans now.
We can talk about Nipsey Hussle next week, because his lawyer, Christopher Darden, who was the prosecutor for the OJ case back in the 90s, he quit.
Yeah.
He quit.
I think it backlashed. I think he really took that case. You said that his family might have had some money. I always said I think he was doing a clout chasing, and I really think that clout, his name out there, and his clout chasing backfired on him.
All right, we'll talk about that next week on the next episode of the Gangster Chronicles. I want to thank all y'all out there for listening. Please go to the Instagram page, Gangster Chronicles, and submit some questions, submit some ideas, and we'll talk about that next week if we like your question. And don't forget to also visit my platform, Street TV, to check out that interview of the Emerald Gangsta Bloods from Southeast San Diego. And until next week, thank you.
Peace.
Peace.
This has been a Digital Soapbox Network production.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears. Real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Moments like my daughter telling me a new joke mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that is spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.